First, I'd like to make this as informal as possible. So if you have any questions while I'm explaining things, just don't hesitate to ask. And I'll try to make everything as clear as possible. First of all, holography started out in the Dark University Laboratory at the University of Michigan in the early 1960s, where they were working on with radar waves to get better tracking systems. From there, it's gone to the present day state of the art, where you can have holography in your living room. And the art and science of computer-generated holography has emerged as an exciting new tool for the person who has a computer in its home. Now, 3D computer-generated motion pictures that are viewed with white light are possible. And also the ones dubbed the conventional holography, where you use a laser, are also possible too. In integral holography, it's basically a three-step process. First, you make a motion generate a image. In this case, it was done on a CRT, which rotates, and then you make a movie from that CRT, and then you use that movie as your subject to print each frame of the motion picture film onto a piece of holographic film. In this talk, I hope to cover the basic definition of a hologram, both from a physical and information storage point of view, some different kinds of holograms, and some applications that are not just in the future, but are happening right now, and also how you can make your own computer-generated integral hologram. First of all, what is a hologram? From a information storage point of view, a hologram differs from a photograph in the sense that in a photograph, you're recording differences in light intensities of point sources from your subject. For example, in a photograph, you have the subject here, and then the lens. Oh, I'll sit down. There we go. Can everybody hear okay? There we go. Okay. And, okay, let's see. Well, you have your subject, and then a lens, and then your film. And for every point on the subject, there's a point on the film. And so that your subject is inverted on the film. In a hologram, though, you're recording the differences in light intensities still in a photographic emulsion, except of the actual wavefronts of light. So that you have your subject here. This would be a top view. And then you have your light that bounces off the subject. And then the film is here. And there's no lenses between the subject and the film, except that you use what we call a reference beam that meets the object beam at the film plane, so that you're recording the differences in light intensities of the actual wavefronts of light as they interact with the film. So that one characteristic that this creates is in a photograph, if you were to cut it up, you would lose part of your image. But in a hologram, in a basic hologram, not this particular type, but in a basic hologram, if you were to cut it up or drop it, in the case it was a piece of glass, in every bit of that glass, you would still have the entire image of your subject, even though it'd just be from a smaller point of view or a narrow point of view, depending on the size of the piece that you had. from a more physical point of view, a hologram is the reflection and diffraction of all periodic wave motions, whether they're within electromagnetic spectrum like light or water waves or even possibly gravity waves. To give you an idea of what a hologram looks like, if you were to look at it, say through a microscope, you would see, instead of a dot pattern, you'd see more of a line pattern, or say maybe something like this. And then where these would be the dark lines where the film was exposed, and then in this area would be light where there was no exposure. Now the way the physical characteristics behind this are, one, coherence length. Traditionally we use a laser to make a hologram, and the advantage of using a laser is that all the light that's emitted is going in one direction and is all the same wavelength or color, versus say the light in this room, which is going in many different directions and has many different wavelengths. Another property that is used is called interference. And this is where two coherent beams of light, or in some cases, in also water waves, where they come together. And you've probably seen this quite a few times, where if you take two pebbles and drop it in a pond, and you get concentric circles. Well, how they interact is the same way that light waves interact, and they'll either add or subtract themselves to give you one waveform that's a combination of two different ones. And that's what you're seeing here. When you have two different waves or laser beams coming together, and let's see. And these are the pluses and minuses, or the mathematical model of the of light. Here, draw it here. Okay, where you have two pluses, they'll add, and you get a dark line. When you have two troughs, you get nothing. There's no exposure. Okay. Briefly, I would like to go through some of the basic different kinds of holograms to give you an idea of what holography is more about than what you see here. First of all, a basic hologram is usually considered to be a basic transmission one. That was the first types of holograms that were made. And the way this is usually made, in the old days, if you were in a university lab, you would have a large granite slab table and very expensive optics and things like that. But you can make these in your home or in your basement, a basic sand table like this, for about $500. And it's equivalent as a hobby, and say, compared to photography in terms of cost. And all it is just a large, usually concrete sandbox that's mounted on a layer of inner tubes. This would be a top view, and then down here I'll draw a side view briefly here. Okay, this area up here would be the top view, and then this is the side view where it's not three-dimensional. Here, let's okay, where your inner tubes are down here, and then you have your box filled with sand. Then once the components settle in the sand, it's just as stable as a very expensive granite slab. So in the basic transmission hologram, you have a laser. Everybody here is familiar with what a simple laser is? Okay. And shoots a beam out here. Then you have, in holography, you generally use front surface coated optics, mirrors, so that you don't get an extra reflection from a rear surface mirror. And so you would shoot the beam across the table and use a beam splitter, which is a piece of glass coated usually like with silver or aluminum, and would give you here being the subject, and then over here being two other mirrors. And what you do is you expand the beam to illuminate your subject, and then the beam, then the reference beam, okay, then the beam is split into an object beam, which illuminates the subject, and the reference beam, which goes directly to the holographic film, which is just high-resolution photographic film. In the case of a reflection hologram, where you have the light source in front of your hologram rather than behind, like this is an example of a transmission hologram, not a basic one, but a where you have your light source behind the hologram, and then you see the image behind the hologram. But in reflection, where you have where you see the subject behind the hologram, but the light source is in front, it's called a reflection hologram. Yeah. And this is made basically the same way as the basic transmission one, except that the reference beam comes from the opposite side of the plate than the object beam, whereas in the basic transmission ones, they came from both the same side. Perhaps you've seen another kind of hologram. It's called an image plane hologram, where the image is half in and half out of the plate. This is made by first making a basic transmission hologram and then projecting that image out into space so that if you were to look at the image, you take a diffuse screen and look at it, and you can, as you move it, you can see different parts of the image, different planes in the images, and it's just, the image is floating in space, and you just put your piece of film there, and then add another reference beam, and that makes an image plane hologram, which is white light. And then another kind of hologram that you probably heard most about is called a projected hologram, where the image is totally projected out in front of the hologram. Not like, where a lot of people ask me, they've heard about, can you project holograms in the middle of the room? Well, that's not quite true. You can project holograms out in front of a images out in front of a hologram, but to project it very far out requires a very large hologram, so that the further out you go, the larger hologram you need. An example of this is that if you have just like an 8x10 hologram, the image is usually only about 6 or 7 inches out front. But to say put the image a foot out in front, we require a gigantic hologram. Then the fifth type of hologram is what's called a composite hologram. And an integral hologram is an example of this kind, where you have a composite or making up of many small holograms into one large one. In this case, in each of the rotating cylinders, there's actually 2,160 holograms sequentially and overlappingly printed onto the piece of holographic film. And the way this is done is first you make a motion picture, at least that's the way we're doing it now, and this can be computer generated, or it doesn't have to be. You can have a subject rotating on a platform. And then you take that motion picture film and you use a special optical printer that uses laser light rather than white light to print each frame of that film on to the hologram, so that if you look closely at one particular hologram on that frame, on one particular hologram in the whole hologram, you would see a hologram about 7 inches high or so and about a centimeter wide, and they're overlapped. About a half a millimeter spacing between each hologram. Okay. Next, is there any questions on generally the types of holograms and basically how they're done? Yes. Okay. Well, traditionally, you use in university labs, they have very expensive granite slabs. Okay, they're like a foot thick and they have hydraulic lifts on them and stuff. And the reason for this is that when you're actually exposing the film, if the wave, if the coherent light moves, usually within a quarter wavelength of light during your exposure time, the waves will nullify themselves so that you won't get a hologram at all. Okay, and that's usually kind of hard to do for making one hologram. You know, but in this case, we're making over 2,000, so that you can imagine a problem, stability problem, that you would have. Okay, but if you use sand, it's a very cheap, easily available source of material that, once it settles, is just as stable as a granite slab. Okay, in this particular kind of hologram, we don't use sand, but in all the other types of holograms I demonstrated, we did. Okay. And it's like you can start a basic system for like $500. You know, you don't need $10,000 and all sorts of grants and stuff like that. Right now, that's each hologram takes about 2 seconds. Using a sandbox with this setup, your exposure might range anywhere from about maybe 2 seconds to maybe even in some cases 2 minutes, depending on the size of your laser, the kind of film you're using, things like that.
One of the problems with using inexpensive lasers, you need to get a single mode and highly stable to get the best.
Right. Well, generally, to do basic holography, a laser in the, I would recommend probably at least 2 milliwatts. And then, if you had 1 milliwatt, that can be used for viewing. But it's generally in making, you want to use about a 2 milliwatt just so that you don't have that long exposure time. Because since your film is so high resolution, it's extremely slow. And so that you want to have a shorter exposure time as possible so that you don't have that much settling problem. So that about with a basic sandbox setup, about a 2 to 10 milliwatt laser works perfectly fine. And you only need like a larger, maybe a 50 milliwatt laser if you're doing like production or something like that, and you just want to make them as fast as possible. Generally, you want to get a laser that doesn't vibrate. We've had some lasers that come from the factory and they have like their power supplies and stuff that they're just not designed for holography. You just have to separate all the as much of the electronics as possible away from the laser tube. Okay, and generally, that's all you need. You know, most commercial lasers work really fine.
How did that? Can you explain exactly how you view these lasers now with white light and not a laser?
Okay. Well, we don't violate physics. The reason that you can see them in what you think is white light is actually that's a rather special bulb. Not that it's not uncommon, you can buy them just about anywhere, but that it's a clear bulb and a vertical filament. So essentially what you have is an elongated point source. Now the way the hologram is made In a basic hologram, you have the laser light bouncing off the subject, which diffracts the light in many directions. But in this type of hologram, since you're using motion picture film as your subject, it only modulates the beam, but it doesn't diffract it out in many directions, so that your system, your camera system that's used for the printing, is totally coherent. And so therefore, the amount of dispersion that you get is extremely small. So you do see, in these holograms, you see a spectral smear if when you go up and down, and that's due to the vertical filament, but the amount of distortion that you would get from spectral smear is really small. But if you look closely, you can see that it is there. These are not as sharp as a laser or lit hologram, but they're good enough. Well, I know you can make a holographic credit card or a business card, whatever. It's just a small hologram. I don't know anybody who's doing it commercially, but I know it can be done. No, each one is, except the 3D effect is stereographic rather than holographic. But each individual one is a true hologram, even though it's only of a 2D image. Excuse me? It is. Except of a 2D image. If you were only to use one frame of film, you would still have a hologram, but you would only see a 2D image. It's the technique in recording of the information rather than, the way you get your 3D effect because you're taking more than one perspective. Okay, go on. Yes. It steps. Well, it could be like in splicing the two ends together, or when they're printed, it's continuous. The holograms, there's three panels that are spliced together, and it's very easy to be off a little bit. It's extremely hard to see the image, two very narrow images right next to each other, and get them accurately lined up. When you're putting your panels together. Or it could be that the film is bent in a platen or something like that would give you an optical distortion.
What happens? Is it like, do you have is it a continuous change that's going around the permanent, or is it, or are you going to have holograms that are connected in the end?
No, it's a continuous automatic process where each panel is mounted in a platen that rotates around a lens and where the image is coming through the lens. And it's all, the machine is all automatic. Or you can do it, if you're doing it yourself, you can do it in a simple sandbox, say using 35 millimeter slides. But it would be a very laborious process. But if you just wanted to make one hologram, you could easily do it that way. Okay, get on. Well, next, I'd like to talk about some applications, computer generated holograms. And it seems to me, from what I've been gathering in the industry, is that with research being done on using electronic optical printers and using video systems to make holograms, that and also in the satellite technology where in the television technology, there seems to be an IC in every image. And it's becoming more truer and truer as time goes on. It's like about in the early 60s when the space program was really active or publicized, you heard a lot about intensifying or making the image better by using a computer. But now it seems like there's many different reasons that you would want to use a computer to generate or modify your image in some way. And these are just a few examples of relatively fairly primitive things that you can do. In the case of the one on the far right, it was made about 2.5 years ago, and it was the first one to be a 3D rotation with motion. The middle one was made shortly after that, but the 121 was made last night. And it's of a fairly sophisticated image, that of the human brain, that can be, like you could have that shaded surfaces rather than just the lines, so that the state of the art is such that you can get extremely good computer-generated images, almost photographic, even for a fairly complex subject, and be able to take those and to make a 3D movie out of them. So that you not only, you just have a whole new medium so that, well, one of the theoretical things you can do is to make something that can't exist in reality. And that's the case of the first hologram, where it has an optical illusion in it. And there's no way that you can build an optical illusion to make it look like that, but yet you can do it with a computer and a hologram. Or there's been computer-generated holograms that have been done that have been interfaced with a real image. And the state of the art is like here, almost here today right now, where you can do that with a very complex image, and so that your computer-generated images look just as real as your real images that were taken with motion picture film. So this opens up a whole new era of being able to apply to different fields. Like, for example, in scientific application, a molecule hologram was done of a complex molecule that, in the motion picture film, the movie didn't move fast enough for the scientist to see all the intricate motions of the molecules, but in a hologram, he could rotate it fast enough so that he could see that. But in most of the scientific applications, it's used for explaining or showing ideas. For example, a 3D moving graft has been done that shows, I believe it's X-ray exposures. And okay, but in that particular case, I mean, you can use a 3D moving graph for just about anything to show something, and it shows it really dramatically. And also, in the case of art, the first integral hologram that was done was commissioned by Salvador Dali, and it was an art piece, and we've done many since then. And in the field of like more commercial applications like advertising and point-of-purchase displays, and conventions. A lot of our business is just conventions like these, that where advertisers want to attract crowds and, you know, promote their products. And it's just like a picture is worth 1,000 words, but a hologram is worth 1,000 pictures. In this case, they're worth over 2,000 pictures. So that whatever area generally that you're interested in, whether it be in the scientifics or the humanities, there's some application that you could, say, use a hologram for. For example, one of the first big ones was a cowboy hologram that was in a game machine. You might have seen it. There's a few of them on Fisherman's Wharf. And it's just as easy that could have been a totally computer-generated image. And it presented a very 3D realistic short little movie that was a lot cheaper for the producer to use than for using a video. Any questions? No. Okay. No.
I don't quite understand where the computer comes in. What is the function of the computer?
Okay, well, in this particular case, it's just another way of making an image. But that may not be true in the near future. One of the problems that we've experienced is what's called time smearing. That's where you're looking at more than one frame at a time with one eye. okay? So that you have one eye is looking at this group of frames and the other eye is looking at this group of frames. And say if you're looking at the motion of my hand, this eye is looking at my hand here and this eye is looking at my hand here. And you see the disparity, so you see an image distortion, okay? Well, one theory that's been proposed to correct that is to use a computer. Well, that would be the quickest way of doing it and cheapest, to take a sampling of each of those original frames of film and to put it onto one frame of film so that each eye would be more or less seeing the same sets of frames of film except slightly further down. And that experiment is, the experimental film to prove that has already been shot and it's waiting to be processed right now. So that if that theory holds, then that the best way to make a integral hologram that doesn't have what we call time sparing would be to use a computer. And that would be a tremendous advantage. And so that, you know, you would just build a printer that had a computer in it, it did automatically, and you use video signals rather than motion picture film. Yes, you can. It's already been done. He said, can you, since these are either 120s or 360, can you make the film as long as you want? And yes, you can. It's just a matter of cost. Yes. Right.
Do I understand it correctly that that is not what you do here?
That's true.
Okay, what you do here, if I understand it correctly, is to take a film of either a rotating object or a computer-simulated rotating object, and then you take holograms of each of those frames of film. Is that right?
That's true. The other technique has been done for quite a while, but it takes extreme amount of computer power to do it, and therefore time and cost and things like that. And this is very inexpensive to do, relatively. Yes? I can't hear you. Well, let me draw a diagram of that. It's fairly complex. It even took me quite a while to really understand it, I think. But you have your original motion picture frames, say here, and then you put that information into a computer, and then the computer prints out another motion picture strip. Say, we'll number these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And the first frame of this one is a composite of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And then the second one would be 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And so on down the line. And this way you would see a wider spectrum of the subject at one time, and so you would have less disparity between your images. Okay. Is there anybody here that's really interested in getting the details about how to generate one of these? If there's only a few, like I could tell you off the side or something. Okay.
She's interested.
Wait, all those people that would like me to talk in detail about how to generate a motion picture strip to do this, raise your hand. What about 10 or 12? Huh? Off to the side? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Michael, for informing us about holography and the interesting applications from that. That concludes what's called the Computer Arts System session.